Welcome, everyone. This is Herb Scribner. This is the Herb Scribner Podcast. I'm Herb Scribner. Today, we're going to be talking about The Mandalorian Season 2, Episode 4. This one's called The Siege. New episode dropped tonight, earlier today at midnight, and lots to cover with this episode. So we're going to break down to the three different sections. First, I'm going to just talk about general takeaways. What I took away from it. Then we'll get into kind of the ending and the deep cut that the ending kind of explains. It's obviously a deeper cut. It's kind of a bigger deal than you might realize. And then lastly, we're going to talk about Gina Carano. We're going to talk about how the show actually set her up for her exit if she wants to exit the show. All that coming up next. All right, so let's talk about Mandalorian Season 2, Episode 4. Somewhat of a bottleneck episode that had some huge implications for where Star Wars is going and for where The Mandalorian is going. I think The Mandalorian does a good job of setting up an episode where it's kind of contained, but then there's like a slight tease or a slight thing that happens that you realize later, oh, that's setting up this, could lead to something big down the road. So basically the fourth episode, titled The Siege, features the Mandalorian and the child, Baby Yoda, returning to Navarro, where they're going to repair their ship as they head off to find Ahsoka Tano. We learned about that last week. It's a huge deal. This is kind of a break from that. I think a lot of people thought we'd see Ahsoka this episode, but next week is directed by Dave Filoni, so obviously they're going to wait a little bit. So while they're at Navarro, they see Greef Karga and Cara Dune, who's now the marshal and of the city there, and they ask the Mandalorian for help in destroying an Imperial base, one that they think is abandoned. Of course, it's not, and an action-adventure story ensues. I'm not going to dip too much into the spoiler pool. Basically, because I don't want to spoil some of the cool things that happen, but there's a lot of callbacks to the early days of The Mandalorian. And we see a lot of nods and little things from the first season, especially first like five episodes or so. It was kind of nice because we're into this section where he's trying to find Ahsoka, and there's just been this vibe of season two, like find Ahsoka, find the Jedi. So it's kind of nice to go back a little bit to what kind of made the show so remarkable in the first place, with some of the characters and some of the Western vibes, and kind of remind us where we were so we can understand where we're going. Just an immediate little nitpick on the episode is there's probably less Mandalorian than I thought we'd see. There were a couple times where I was like, wow, we haven't seen him in a little bit. And I think that's kind of, I mean, we've seen him a lot in recent episodes. Maybe it's not a big deal, but it was kind of interesting to me that pulled off. And then it kind of, I think there are a lot of people who, you know, there's this vibe of Mandalorian where it's kind of like Mandalorian waltzes into town, saves the day, you know, and that's going to keep happening. I've kind of made peace with it. I think that was a big critique I had for a long time, but that's what the show is going to be about, you know, so might as well just accept it. So I just want to, first off, this episode is packed with lore and deep Star Wars trivia. You know, there's a cool scene with the protocol droid, and he's kind of explaining Coruscant and you know, Hosnian Prime and all these different, you know, the Kessel stuff. And, you know, there's a lot of cool things with that I think it's a brief scene that actually pays homage to like the prequels, the sequels, and the originals all in one go. And that's kind of a slight nod to those things and show that this is part of that universe. It actually would help you understand kind of the differences between the core, the Outer Rim. I think that was really helpful for people because not everyone will know the show. There's also a really cool statue in the background. I don't know if you guys noticed it, but that's of IG-11. That was a really helpful thing to see because it shows that this universe is still, that's one of those callbacks to season one that I think we need in the show. And it's kind of like a cool thing because that was a big moment for the show. And it was a big moment for just, you know, the Mandalorian and his development. So as he's going forward, it's kind of cool to see, hey, this is what you went through before. And, you know, speaking of that callback vibe, you know, this episode in a lot of ways reminded me of A New Hope, because it was like a person from the past asking you to go on a journey with them, you getting this little band of adventurers together, and you going to stop an Imperial base. Very A New Hope, very Force Awakens. I'd say it's more A New Hope than anything else. There were, and just kind of the scenes with the stormtroopers, the way they acted, the Imperial base, a lot of it reminded me of that original trilogy feel, specifically with A New Hope. There's even like a security thing that they got to unlock, and they're on this beam that reminds me of what Obi-Wan did in A New Hope, where he's on that little tractor thing, or the, you know, the tall beam thing, and he sets the security down to get the just to get free of the Death Star and all that. That's what this reminded me of in a couple different ways. So it was kind of cool. And then we saw some speeder bikes like Return of the Jedi. So it was a really good callback to the original trilogy. I like when they do that. I think this series has a funny enough, a lot of callbacks to the original trilogy. Not so much the sequels or the prequels. But that was kind of interesting. You know, Mandalorian gets a lot of credit for setting up its own story, being its own original take on the Star Wars universe, kind of separate from the Skywalker saga. But again, it fits to that mold of, you know, you got to realize where you were to know where you're going. And I think it's important for this series to remind us, like, this is the stakes, this is the universe we're in, this is the state of play. And so it's always important to do that. And I think when you call back to A New Hope, when you call back to Return of the Jedi, you get that call of like, okay, this is where we are. So, and again, this is kind of a spoiler heavy part, but the episode sets up the rest of the season and future seasons. You know, the true ending with Moff Gideon, where he's got these soldiers, and we'll get into them a little bit later, but it shows him with this like army of troopers that look electronic and kind of like robotic or something. You know, that's signaling we're going to get more Moff Gideon. We're going to get a battle between him and Mando. It shows he's still on the hunt for the child and he won't rest until he finds him. You know, there's implications here with something to do with the, you know, Baby Yoda's, the child's DNA and M count, which might be the midichlorian count, I would assume. And just his, you know, Moff Gideon's coming for Mando. And so that sets that up. But I want to talk about a little moment that I think was more important to the development of the show in general. And it was when this New Republic officer, he sees Greef and Kara, and he says, when the Imperial base exploded, he comes and he's like, hey, the Razor Crest was here. And, you know, can you help us? And they don't help him. And he says something along the lines of like, you know, something's going on out in the Outer Rim. The New Republic needs to get involved, but no, someone's got to talk to us. Someone's got to let us get involved. To me, this was a moment where the show is setting up something bigger down the road. I don't know if it's season 2. It might not be season 3. It could be season 4 or 5. But basically, it's like there's all this stuff happening out in this territory, and the New Republic's acknowledging it. The Empire's obviously chasing Baby Yoda, so they're already involved. So, you know, and now we're meeting Ahsoka. And so I have this, like, feeling that moment's actually going to speak to something larger where down the road we're going to see the New Republic kind of get involved, and it's going to start this kind of like proxy war again between the Empire and the New Republic, and it's going to start this entire new chapter where the Mandalorians involved with the New Republic, and maybe we get closer to seeing like a younger Luke, a younger Leia, a younger Han Solo. You know, you could do these things then that would, like, you know, and even if not them, you could hear their voices. You know, it would connect more to the Skywalker saga. Whether or not they do that is one thing, but it's kind of important that, like, the New Republic is taking shape and is kind of developing. At the same time all this is happening, obviously Yoda has ties to the Republic. So I guess my question would be whether or not they're going to link those two together, and whether or not we're actually going to end up seeing the New Republic and the Mandalorian kind of get involved and kind of work together in some way. I think that's really where the series will be heading. And so it was kind of an important episode because, yeah, you've got all these callbacks to the originals. You got all this callback to season 1, you know, Mando hanging out with the season 1 buddies. But I think what's more important then is that it also set up pieces for next season and the seasons after that and the seasons after that. So again, you know, really important episode. I think, you know, it's going to get really heavy from here on out, I would imagine, with Ahsoka Tano still in there, the Mandalorians, you know, they might still be out there doing some stuff. You know, who knows what we're getting? You know, the trailer really just included scenes from the first 4 episodes, so who knows what we're getting with these next few episodes. It could really go anywhere, and I'm fully expecting things to get crazy, you know, because I think that there's a reason why they wouldn't show that kind of stuff to us. and it's been a very quiet like off season in terms of you know, everything that we've kind of heard about has already hit. You know, we knew Ahsoka was coming, we knew Boba Fett was coming, and we've seen all that. And so I don't know what else there really is. There's rumors of like Darth Maul maybe, but who knows if, and Sabine, you know, who knows if that's going to end up happening. So I'm really excited about where this is going. And I think it was kind of cool to take a breather, kind of calm down, see where we at, see where we were, remind us of season one before we head off, and see the rest of the season two. So that's cool. Let's take a quick break. I want to, when we come back, we're going to talk about the ending. The ending is actually a really, really fascinating thing that I didn't realize in the moment. And then I did some research on, and I was like, oh man, like this is actually really cool for Star Wars, really deep cut Star Wars stuff that I think the nerdy guys like me would like, but I don't know if everybody else would like. So anyway, we'll be right back. See you in a minute. All right, welcome back. Mandalorian ending. Let's talk about it. So season two, episode four, the ending is actually like low-key one of the coolest moments in The Mandalorian that like I didn't know about. And then as I thought about it more, I was like, wow, this is actually a really cool ending. So the ending shows a cliffhanger where it's Moff Gideon and he's on his ship. And he's, you know, let's take a step back. So as we were talking about, you know, Mandalorian, Grief, Kara team up, destroy the Imperial base, Mandalorian heads off, saves the day, all that. We learn later that someone who is like helping to repair the Mandalorian ship added a tracking device for the Emperor, which gives Moff Gideon, who's looking for Baby Yoda, a chance to find him because it's tracking the ship. So the episode ends with the Imperial officer telling Gideon, hey, you know, we're tracking the ship. And then Gideon turns around and he's looking at these things that are hooked up into the wall, and it's a legion of like what looks like stormtroopers. That they're locked into the wall. They're colored in like all black. Clearly there's some kind of army, some kind of group of soldiers there. So when I first saw that, it was kind of dark, and I was trying to like, what am I looking at? I don't even know what I'm looking at. And then I like noticed the shape of the helmets. I noticed the shape of like the shoulders, and I'm like, huh. And then something clicked where I was like, this means something. Like, this is more than just like, you know, and the way the music was swelling, I'm like, this isn't just like he's got his own army. It's like, it's something more. Like, there's something deeper here. So I think on one level, it obviously tells us that Gideon is not resting. He's going to go after the Mandalorian. He's going to go after Baby Yoda. Like, that's all happening, of course. But the brief moment, it could actually be a hint of how Gideon plans to retake the galaxy and how the Empire is going to respond to the New Republic. And here's why. So the trooper scene at the end might actually be these things called Dark Troopers or Shadow Troopers. And that's according to GamesRadar.com. Just a shout out to them. The troopers were originally seen in the Dark Forces video game. It's Star Wars Dark Forces. Came out in 1995. It was kind of a first-person shooter game. And in that game, the Empire created a legion of highly skilled droid soldiers, part of the Dark Trooper Project. And they're highly dangerous. Some of the builds had... this is where it gets interesting. They're highly dangerous. And some of the builds even had Beskar-beating, force-wielding exoskeletons. So in short, the Dark Troopers could actually probably take Mandalorian on one-on-one because they have that Beskar armor or beating armor. They have force-wielding capabilities. That's insane if they're the Dark Troopers. Like, the Dark Troopers are just built to be taking on those kind of things. And you could look up some of the images online, and they're really, like, tall and big and strong. But here's another thing. So they were used in the fight in the Empire with the Empire and the New Republic originally, killing swaths of rebellion soldiers. The Dark Troopers even had three different phases. There was, like, a droid kind that had, like, a vibroblade. There was another one that had armor. There was another one that was never fully developed, but it basically was Iron Man. Like, it was basically that kind of look. Here's the thing, though. They could also be Shadow Troopers. And Shadow Troopers are even, like, more dangerous because they have a lot of that armor. But here's the thing. You look at Wikipedia. Shadow Troopers wielded lightsabers that used Sith crystals. Yeah. So the troopers had a uniform that could actually resist lightsabers, which actually makes them difficult to defeat with a lightsaber. Good luck using a blaster. So, like, they'd have a lights like they could like they wielded lightsabers, and then their armor could stop the Force. They could stop lightsabers. Like, they were basically made to defeat the Jedi. And it makes sense, because if you think about, like, the Empire developing soldiers, then you'd have, like, Darth Vader, who's, like, obviously knows what you need to do to defeat a Jedi and all that. So that's shocking to me that, like, those kind of soldiers. Okay, so think of that. Think of the soldiers. Think of the army. Think of that. The fact that that would be Moff Gideon's armor is a huge deal, because that shows to me that the Mandalorian's going to need more than just himself. And it also shows that, like, maybe that's how he's going to tie in with the New Republic and get them on his side. And here's the thing. We know the Mando's going to find Ahsoka, and she was a Jedi, is now a citizen, or whatever that is. But all she might have is a lightsaber and the Force. And if these soldiers can't be defeated by that, like, how's he going to do it? So I thought that was really interesting. It also kind of, like, handicaps Baby Yoda in some sense. So that's fascinating. I just love that the Mandalorian would even think about that. Like, it just seems like they researched all the lore of Star Wars, and they just found something that was, like, super unique and super deep, and they just decided to add it into the show. And I think that's a clever, clever way. And I believe we did find out not too long ago that this Dark Forces video game was considered canon, so it actually fits. And even if it's not canon, like, they just made it canon. So that's super fascinating. Again, like, I don't want to say this is for sure, because, like, I couldn't really see the soldiers. Maybe they end up going by a different name. But to me, all signs are pointing towards them being Shadow Troopers and Dark Troopers, and that's amazing. So that was a really cool move by the Mandalorian to add that in. And so this is going to be a huge battle coming forward, and it's going to really shape out how we see the rest of the series. I mean, that's a huge army from Moff Gideon, and he's already got the Darksaber. I mean, and I get part of it, because, like, this show doesn't obviously have, like, the biggest villain. Like, you can't really bring in the Emperor. You can't really bring in Darth Vader, obviously, because he's dead. Kylo Ren's too young. You know, like, so figuring out who is going to present the biggest issue, like, is a problem. And so, like, I think they needed to really stack the deck, where Moff Gideon, obviously, you know, really compelling and really villainous guy. The Darksaber, like, led him to a whole new level, where it's like, wow, he got that Darksaber. How'd he get it? Like, that's a huge thing. And now that he has these soldiers, like, that's even bigger. Like, the fact that he's got this group of soldiers, he's got one of the most powerful weapons in the universe. It really showed me how big of a villain he is. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about who's like, the leader of the Emperor at this time, because, like, you have, like, different admirals and different leaders that have been in charge, and you know, especially at this time, there's different factions of the Empire. So the fact that we have, you know, Moff Gideon now, you know, he's like the top guy. Like, I don't think there'd be anyone that could really stand up to him in terms of, like, villainy for this show. So I don't know where this goes. I mean, I just thought that ending was super cool, because it was just, like, a very deep cut, and just a very, very deep, like, if you know Star Wars, you knew this, but, like, even me, like, I'm a big Star Wars fan. I didn't even know this. I had to research it. So the fact that that's even out there, and now people might be looking into that, and might be looking, like, what does the ending mean? And then looking, oh my gosh, like, the Dark Troopers, the Storm Troopers, the Shadow Troopers, like, what is that? And then it just adds another layer to this. And I think it's kind of cool too, because it gives those super fans something that they might not have seen before, but then it gives those casual fans even something to, like, look into and be like, oh my gosh, like, now I have to read this, or I have to look at this. So credit to the show for just adding that stuff. And including that, because I think that's really just a really great way to kind of go about that, and a really great way to kind of, like, use the old culture and the new culture and kind of bring it together. And you know, I think that's one thing too, is that, like, I think the sequel trilogy definitely relied on things in the original trilogy, right? It's kind of cool that this is using stuff from other things. So, like, this is using the Clone Wars, this is using, like, a video game, this is using, you know, like, little things that, like, we might, you know, maybe a book here or there, like, things that we maybe don't all read, don't all play, don't all watch, and yet, like, it's being used for this. I think that's really just really entertaining to me, that, like, they would even go that deep and really, really look at, like, video games. Even, who knows, like, there's also some talk of them having used, like, different cards and different stuff like that. Credit to them, shout out to them. It'll be interesting to see where it goes forward. Okay, so we're gonna take one more break, and then we're gonna come back, and we're gonna talk about Gina Carano. I'm not gonna get too much into the politics of it, but I just want to talk about how the ending could set up her exit for the show. So stay with us. All right, welcome back to our last segment of the show. So again, Mandalorian episode, reaction, review. We talked about the ending. We talked about instant reaction. I want to talk about Gina Carano and how this show actually set up her exit from the show if she were to leave or if Disney were to let her go or something like that. So to kind of sum up, she's been under fire in recent weeks due to her kind of political leanings. Long story short, she kind of shared her political beliefs on Twitter and social media. She talked about voter fraud in the 2020 election, getting rid of fake votes, requiring ID at voting booths, that kind of stuff. And basically social media kind of wrapped her up in the cancel culture stuff and, said, that Disney should fire her, all that. Again, this is like all isolated to social media, so it doesn't necessarily reflect how the general population feels about this. But again, so that happened first. Then, like, days later, she posted a meme on Twitter that kind of went after Democratic government leaders. And the meme said, quote, now recommends, or Democratic, okay, it says, quote, Democratic government leaders now recommends we all wear blindfolds along with masks so we can't see what's really going on, end quote. And people took that as a base, she criticizing Democratic leaders, criticizing mask wearing during the pandemic. And so fans kind of went after her again, and they started a hashtag called hashtag fire Gina Carano, and it started trending on Twitter, and that's where we're at. So all that said, and you can read more coverage of that by me at Deseret.com. So there's a lot to unpack there, but I just want to talk about what The Mandalorian just did. So the episode, we don't know how the rest of the season is going to shape out. We don't know if her character is going to be leaving anyway. We don't know what they're setting up for her character. There was rumors of a spinoff with Bo-Katan and all that, which we saw Bo-Katan last episode. But in this episode, there was something that happened that set that up. So in this episode, New Republic officers responded to an incident. They come and talk to Cara Dune, and they ask her if she would consider joining the New Republic because she used to live on Alderaan. She's a former shock trooper. And she says she's not a joiner, she doesn't want to join the fight, all that. But it was one of those, like, the scene is too long to really just be a fleeting moment. Like, it's too long to be, like, a major scene, but long enough where this is probably going to come back later in some way. And it's a foreshadowing moment, to me, that hinted that Dune might be actually kind of making that move. And, the New Republic officer left her this medal, or I don't know if it's a tracking beacon, whatever it is. And she kind of stared at it with a longing eye. And so they're clearly going for something with, like, character development there. And they're going for something that kind of suggests that she's going to be on the move or doing something. Maybe she joins the New Republic down the road. And again, I don't know if, what's going to happen with her character. But to me, this was actually, like, an exit possibility. We don't know if she wants to leave the show or if the Mandalorian showrunners want her to leave. But the episode did set up an exit where if she decided to leave or Disney wanted to leave, you have an easy out. She went to do the New Republic. It's clean. It's not something where it gets messy and it's like, oh, she just disappeared. And again, like, The Mandalorian is that kind of show where if she just didn't show up again, that's fine. I just thought it was a little interesting that they did kind of set up this little nugget of a moment where if she does leave or if she gets fired or if something happens where, then it kind of can easily be explained away. I know before the show launched last night, before the episode premiered, a lot of people were kind of, they were wondering whether or not she was going to be on the show, if this was going to be her last episode. There were some websites that wrote some think pieces about it. And so I would just say, yeah, like, I think it's pretty clear that they've set it up. Whether or not they actually force her to leave the show is one thing. I don't know if they will. Disney ABC obviously had a similar kind of scenario with Roseanne, and they created the Conners and all that. You can read about that online as well. it gets messy with cancel culture, and I don't really want to go into that kind of stuff, but I just want to say that, you know, to me it was just kind of a fun little highlight that they've kind of set up something for Cara Dune to do. So if they were looking for a clean exit, they have it now. So who knows? And who knows what goes on with her character? Who knows where she goes? Who knows what they're setting up? Maybe they're setting up something bigger where she kind of unites the New Republic and saves Mando, that kind of thing. You know, I just highlighted in the last segment that I think the New Republic stuff is going to come back for sure, as we kind of like go through the rest of the season and future seasons. I think that's definitely going to happen. So anyway, just thought I'd mention that. I thought that was kind of a unique moment. I don't have any inside info. I don't have anything like that. Again, there's been rumors of a spinoff, you know, but those rumors were coming out way before this recent round of controversy kind of came up on social media. So I'll leave it at that. But yeah, so let's see. So okay, so we got that. And I'm going to take one more break, and then I'm just gonna come back and highlight the LEGO Holiday Special. So stay with us. All right, last segment. Just real quick, I want to go over the LEGO Star Wars Holiday Special. Kind of came out on Disney Plus earlier this week. So the simple way to say it is, I think it's a perfect coda to Rise of Skywalker. I know a lot of people didn't really like Rise of Skywalker, and there's some kind of mixed feelings about it. I do think LEGO Star Wars Holiday Special was a great Christmas special set in the Star Wars universe. Pretty entertaining sequel to Rise of the Skywalker, I gotta say. Like, the way they kind of, like, made it a sequel where it actually mattered, and it was actually kind of canon stuff. But at the same time, kind of being silly enough where it doesn't have to count as canon, but it can. It started with Rey teaching, you know, Finn how to use a lightsaber, and then she goes through all these moments in the Star Wars universe. There's obviously some time travel issues that, you know, this obviously something like this is not going to pay attention to. You know, if all this actually happened back in the past, why don't we know about it? That kind of thing. But anyway, I think that's just, you know, that's all small stuff. But in general, I just want to say, like, it was essential viewing for any Star Wars fan. It's kind of cool to see like fan fiction-esque moments that you wanted to relive. You know, we saw like Rey and Return of the Jedi Luke teaming up against Darth Vader, Palpatine, Kylo Ren. We saw Rey versus Darth Vader a couple times. We saw all the Obi-Wan Kenobis together. Just little fan fiction moments that I thought were a nice touch. And to give us something that like kind of washes out the taste of Rise of Skywalker, but also gives us something new. And it kind of shows that those characters are still alive and still living and breathing. And could actually, maybe this is a yearly thing where they're just like a LEGO kind of thing, and that's how their story lives on. There was that rumor a while ago that they were going to reset the entire, you know, sequel trilogy and stuff like that. And I think they, now thinking about some of those things, it's kind of funny because this was kind of like that where they kind of went back in time and like did some things. But I just think in general, like, this was a really cool special that I'm not really one for, like, LEGO stuff. I actually don't really love the video games. I don't love the, you know, TV, the little movies and TV specials they've done in the past. But I did think this one was just kind of cool because it did kind of rely on some of the, you know, just some of the coolest moments in Star Wars. And you know, it's never a bad time to rewatch some of the Star Wars stuff, especially around the holidays. It's just a good feel-good stuff. And I think they did a good job of kind of showing all that. And presenting us with some content that's new and fresh and different. So I support it. I think definitely watch it if you're a Star Wars fan for sure. Give it a look. And yeah. Okay, well that's pretty much all I gotta say about that. This is another episode of the Herb Scribner podcast. Again, for those who don't really know, my name is Herb Scribner, and I'm a writer at Deseret.com. And I've just kind of just started doing this podcast just to see if I get some viewers. And I've kind of started to tailor more towards Star Wars stuff. We might talk about writing and some different pop culture stuff as we go along. But this episode, I just want to do some Star Wars stuff. So thanks again for listening. If you want any feedback, if you want to give me any feedback, email me at hscribner@gmail.com. Otherwise, yeah, we'll talk soon. And thanks for listening. And yeah, thanks again. We'll be right back.